news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
FM Talk 106.5, my pal Rick Cleveland's in. He'll be back in on Saturday morning with the Prep Sports Report.
That's right.
He just dropped in real quick to take care of some business with Sean Sullivan, 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. This portion of this show today is brought to you by Bryant Bank, because it's a reminder that tomorrow, Football Fridays with Paul Feinbaum.
Oh, yes.
Which is huge for us, and a lot. He's been really excellent. He's been very engaging.
He's kind of good at it.
He's very good at it. And Bryant Bank's good at what they do, too. If you're looking for a personalized banking experience and you don't want to feel like you're just another number in the system, then you need to make the switch to Bryant Bank. At Bryant Bank, they focus solely on you, and you have direct access to a banker, which is great, a banker that'll sit down with you and work hard to understand who you are, where you're going, and how they can meet your financial needs. Bryant Bank offers standard banking services like personal and business loans, checking and investment accounts, and treasury management services, too. And if you're looking to purchase a home or refinance, Bryant Bank's experienced team of mortgage lenders are ready to serve you. You can meet the team or apply for a loan online by visiting bryantbank.com/mortgage. Bryant Bank, by the way, equal housing lender, NMLS 582-857. Branch is located in Daphne, Foley, Orange Beach, and Airport Boulevard in Mobile. Whatever branch it may be, the Bryant Bankers are always friendly and ready to help you. Bryant Bank bringing you Feinbaum's, the Football Friday with Feinbaum on Friday morning at this time tomorrow. So just be ready for it. He's got some things to talk about this weekend.
Shoo.
We have real big boy football now. Alabama going up, I don't understand, it's going to be a big threat that they got to play Florida, but they're on the road in Gainesville. That can't be the easiest of games.
Right. And you've got a classic SEC matchup.
Exactly.
Right?
That'll be on CBS in the middle of the afternoon. Then you've got at night, what a nice little dessert for you. Get done with that, and in about, you might have about a 45-minute window there where you can throw some food down the old hatch.
Yes.
Auburn at Penn State, and it's going to be a whiteout at Penn State, which is a spectacular thing to see. It's all, Penn State's in the middle of nowhere. There are no lights in that town.
Right.
There's just lights at the football stadium, and then everybody's wearing bright white. It should be amazing to see.
Yeah, what, 1,300-mile road trip there for the Auburn Tigers going to Happy Valley. Penn State College.
Have you been to Happy Valley? Uh-huh. I know you got folks in Pennsylvania, but yeah. I've never been to Happy Valley.
My late uncle was a professor there.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. English professor.
Very good school, by the way. Now, you know, it's a state university, but it's not in any way easy to just slide on in there.
No, here's how we did in our family. Nobody had on that side had gone to college before my late uncle, mm-hmm. and then he decided to be a PhD and teach.
He went all the way.
Everybody else farmed, and he said, man, I'm going to get away from this. And then he went, it was a professor.
You know, so around the age of 18 or 19, when you come to the conclusion, this ain't for me.
That was his. He's like, nobody else has ever gone to college in our family, but I'm going to do it. And
good for him.
Yeah.
So I worked 1 year in the steel foundry in our hometown when I got out of high school because I had no real plans or direction. But quickly realized this ain't for me.
Yeah, you didn't want to be the subject of a Billy Joel song the rest of your life. Yeah.
Which I kind of would have been. So Aldott is going to be busy widening I-10. Did you see this, Sean? Weather permitting, they're going to start on Sunday night. Now, we already know about the tunnel. That's one thing. But this is a project that's in West Mobile. It extends from Exit 10, that's County Road 39, that interchange, to County Road 69, Plantation Road overpass, west of Exit 15 in Mobile. So from Exit 10 to about 15 or about to 4 miles, you'll see all the cones and everything going up, but they're going to have additional lanes eastbound and westbound on I-10 during that portion of the interstate. So they think it's necessary. It might be an inconvenience for a while, and I think it's going to be done by late November. But anyway, look for that if you travel I-10.
All right, let me add to this, too. Traffic issue right now. I've got a text here. There, if you're headed eastbound on Greelod, try to find another way. There's a 3-car accident in the eastbound lane of Greelod just before you get to University. causing quite a backup. So if y'all are coming down Greelot, heading east, heading to get on University to go north or south, that accident's there in the eastbound lane of Greelot before you get to University. So we'll get more on that with Kane and traffic coming up in a couple minutes. And this is probably going to be the story today throughout the day, tomorrow throughout the day as the rain continues.
Dr. Bill said slowly clearing, and we were waiting on him. Yes.
Yes.
Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, how about
that?
The whole weekend.
The whole weekend. So I want to get your opinion on this real quick. You've got Freedom Fest has been announced now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Out the wharf, yeah.
Right. A little bit of that, was this a bridge thing between Tony Kinnon and the mayor of Gulf Shores? Like, y'all can't even pull this off, so I'm going to come to the rescue, and I'm going to make sure that something happens with these vendors. It felt a little bit like Mayor Kinnon is being the hero in this scenario, and took a shot at Gulf Shores for not going through with the plans.
Well,
is there any of that?
Is there some politics afoot? Probably, but what is politics? Like, I don't know what's in in the mayor's mind, but if I've got constituents, if I've got constituents down there that make a bunch of their money from Shrimp Fest,
yep,
and 2 years in a row, Shrimp Festival is canceled, and they're in my ear. I mean, they're my constituents, and they're saying, we got to do something. You know, that we got to sell fried shrimp or rubber band guns or artwork or whatever, all the different things that go. This is how we make a living. And I'm their elected official.
Mm-hmm.
If there's Orange Beach versus Gulf Shores, if they're still wherever they live down there, it gets my attention.
Yeah.
And if I can do it safely, I'm going to say, yeah, let's do something here. That's the government that's closest to you at a municipal level. And you can get, you know, if you start complaining to Washington that the shrimp festival is off and you're not able to sell your stuff, that's one thing. But if you talk to your mayor or council people in the city and go, man, this is what we do for a living, I think this is what you get.
I think there's a little bit of Hatfields and McCoys involved in there, myself.
Okay.
But I am happy that it's going to happen. I know Jim Cox is involved, you know, Jim from football with me on
Friday night. I've met him once or twice, yeah.
So he is, you know, I don't know if he's employed by the wharf, but he does a lot of their events and publicity for the wharf. So before this all comes about, it's going to be the 9th of October. We'll talk to him and get an idea of exactly. And they said it might be 2 days, but now I think they've settled that it's just going to be that Saturday. We'll get a better idea from him exactly what's going to be happening at the wharf on October the 9th.
All right. Three big things, top news stories of the day. You can always find these on the front page of our website, fmtalk1065.com.
The fact that Alabama shrank last year.
Yeah.
And again, I'm just proposing, take the deaths in 2019, that number, and then the ones in 2020, and compare them, and whatever the difference is, that's probably your legitimate COVID-19 deaths.
Right. Yeah, that's one thing. So the headline, it came, you know, yesterday. A lot we're talking about Dr. Scott Harris in Alabama Department of Public Health coming out saying that there are more deaths in 2020 than any year in Alabama's history. Actually, I think that's going back to like
1900.
Okay, 1900. Mm-hmm. So going back to 1900 and doing a compare and contrast. All I was pointing out is, and Ramsey Archibald had the story over at AL.com, but you need to look at, this is a real thing and the deaths from COVID are a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you also need to make sure we're comparing maybe the changes from year to year. Like you said, I think that's the best way to look at it, because we've had health professionals on the show with me, epidemiologists, people that are in the pro-vaccine, pro. But the people who come on with me will be honest, and I've asked this question, you know, hey, if somebody has COVID but they get run over by a track hoe, and they said that gets written down as a COVID death. Okay, so
I've heard the interviews,
And so people say they're lying. These folks on my show don't lie. They tell you that that's a true thing. So with that being said, I think there would be deaths that would happen in our state in a given year without COVID that got moved into the COVID column.
Okay.
That does not take away from the deaths that happened because of COVID. Somebody that would have never been in the hospital, never died in the given year because of COVID. But in that mix, there are other deaths that got clumped in with COVID, right?
Yes.
So if you try to say that this is, let's compare, 2018 and 2020, you're moving some deaths what would have happened anyway. If the track hoe would have backed over me, it could have happened in 2018 without me having COVID. Mm-hmm. It happened to happen, during a COVID year. But there is a tell here, obviously, of the people. You look at the people nationally. There's a real number, but I also think if you try to compare it to pre-pandemic, and you've got to be accurate and say there's some percentage of those deaths that were qualified as COVID that could have happened if COVID had not been there. Mm-hmm. It would have been a death from a car wreck, something else happening. But there was a significant, but on the flip side, there's a significant, obviously, I mean, you and I sitting here, I mean, people, you know, we know that have passed from COVID.
Yeah, right? plenty.
So this is a real story. So it's just often the devil's in the details, mm-hmm. and the reality's in the middle of this somehow.
And I just think if ever, you know,
boy, it doesn't make as, my stuff doesn't make as good a sensational headline, but.
No, but again, the messaging from authorities has been a problem with this from the start.
Correct. And the problem is, it seems like anymore, you've got to be on one side of this or the other. You got to say that but none of them died of COVID or all of them died of COVID.
Yeah.
When the reality is, there's people that got put into the COVID death column that probably shouldn't have, but there's plenty of people there that died absolutely because of COVID.
Legitimate, yes. COVID deaths. It's 17 after 8 o'clock. We're going to talk with Rob Holbert from Landyap.com. Maybe get a handle on all these people falling over themselves endorsing Herman Thomas. What is up with that? FM Talk 106.5, Dan and Sean. FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan and Sean Sullivan is in for Dalton, who is under the he was under the weather when he got here, I'll be honest mm-hmm. with you, but he hung in there for a while. And
He's tough.
He
knows how to play hard.
So, Clyde Chambliss, state senator, was a guest on the Jeff Poore Show yesterday. And he talked about the upcoming legislative session and what we can expect from it. This was yesterday, and you can find it on our podcast page, by the way.
Well, it has definitely slowed the process. You know, it slowed everything in our economy, our society, as everybody knows and has been dealing with. But even with that, we have made significant progress. I just rode by a few minutes ago. The road that's Highway 82 that's being four-laned in Prattville, and it's finally being accomplished and very, very much needed.
I should have said he was talking about the effect COVID had. Of course, he was pretty much the author of the Rebuild Alabama Act a few years ago, and he just says it slowed everything down. And it's you know, we talked about this several times, Sean, Dalton and I, but June the 1st, it felt like clear sailing just about with COVID, and then the variant popped up, and right around the time that I visited you down on the island, we had this, careful, slow down, and it's kind of thrown a monkey wrench into everything right now.
Okay, and yes, a lot of people felt like it was smooth sailing, but I hearken back to, this is my lament on our ICU bed situation in the state. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I realize all the factors, although I would love people that are in the healthcare field. They're welcome to call in 343-0106 because this is not against you, but it's against the state, the way we spent the money. Do you remember? So the original allocation, so much is focused now on the Recovery Act money. I'm not getting the term right. I don't have any notes in front of me because mm-hmm. I'm not the computer. I say that normally. So this mm-hmm. is off the top of my head. But I'm talking about the CARES Act 1.
Right.
You know, so former President Donald Trump passes CARES Act 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it came through, the Treasury Department told the state, remember they said, here's the money. It has to be spent by December 31st of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through all the, like, how can they use it? And they were trying to come up with creative ways to use it and you know, the debate of could it be used to rebuild the Capitol, you know, building there on Goat Hill, or is it rural broadband, or can it be, it was used for like giving laptops to kids and paying for internet for kids to do home learning and Zoom. And I said, in amongst this, would it not be a good idea to allocate some of this to, and I know this could be complicated, but come on, we got brains here in the state, we can figure this out, to allocate some of this money to build out facilities at even if it was like a multi-use facility, like a big, you know, like a armory building or mm-hmm. something like that, that could be segmented and had all the things you needed to put in extra ICU beds and separate people, and then we could use it for staging for FEMA one day or whatever.
Are you talking about one facility
across the state? Across the state.
Okay.
You know, look at the state, look at your population centers, look at mm-hmm. where the need would be, and build these facilities. And in these facilities, I know we use some of the PPE money to buy ventilators and buy those that PPE equipment and ventilators, et cetera, were used with the CARES Act money. But if you could use that to build structures, to have more ICU beds.
Who oversees the structures?
Well, I would say that you would have some adjunct, it would be the county that you build it in, with a written agreement with hospitals that they could feed into there. And I understand that one of our issues is not just the beds. It's the staff. It's the nurses, right? It's the physicians.
You're dealing with that right now.
I agree. But at some points, too, they run out of beds or places to put people to keep them separated in a COVID area and a non-COVID area. If we'd have built those facilities and gotten the metal buildings built and get them nice, but you could then stage the beds in there and the extra equipment you would need in a given county. And then when we get in these situations like we're in right now, to me, that's why early on, why don't you spend the money on this? Because I said, we don't know what's next year and next year and next year. And I'm no physician. I'm no Nostradamus
here. Hospital administrator.
Definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
Just a guy.
Hospitals are for profit, right?
Correct. But you have the county, which is not for profit.
Mm-hmm.
If it's functioning properly, it shouldn't be for profit. Like county government around the state would have these facilities. And then they would have agreements with hospitals and say, listen, when y'all get in this position, now the ambulances aren't going to be sitting in front of there. They're going to bring the extra people here. We have these, you know, people that are working this facility, you know, that can come in here and put more people in these beds. We should have done that back then instead of Treasury saying, we got to spend it all and spend it all right now. Sure, buy the PPE, buy the extra beds and ventilators, and then get a facility somewhere to put these people that when we have, because who knows what next year is?
I know.
This idea that we know that it's one and done and all, this could be going on for decades.
Okay, yeah,
I pray to God not,
I
but
know.
I mean, to prepare ourselves to have, I don't want to hear the story. If we're spending all this money that's going to be debt for my great-great-great-grandchildren to pay off, we ought to be doing something to deal with the triage list of what's most important to deal with a pandemic here. And as we go down the list of things, find what's the number one priority. Well, we're looking at it. It's a push on ICU beds and nursing and physicians, right? That should be one and two that we're staffing up and paying for.
How many major hospital players are in our area? You've got infirmary, you've got Providence Ascension, you've got Spring Hill.
Yeah.
Is that pretty much it, Mobile, Baldwin County?
Well, I mean, for Baldwin County.
Right, but I mean.
We got Thomas.
Which is infirmary, right?
I think they are.
And USA Health.
USA Health.
USA Health. So these are conversations that, again, it's the SEC West.
Well,
they're all in competition with
each other. Sure, and we can get in. Listen, Jeff's had such great conversations about certificate of need and how that goes on in the state. But I'm outside that lane right now. I actually agree with Jeff, and I want to fight that fight. But what I'm saying is right now, when you get all this money coming in from the federal government, and we're going to do this project and that project, and that doesn't mean those projects aren't good, but what about dealing with the needs long-term if we have different variants or, to hell with it, a different pandemic hits, to have a facility for overflow that – when we're not in this situation, you can cut the lights off or use it for something else, and it's not, you know, it's not costing the hospital
it's not
money,
draining,
but it's,
right.
it comes in and subs in, and you want to keep people separated and keep people that are sick away from older folks or people with immunocompromised folks. You have these facilities built out. The counties can run them. They have a deal with the hospitals that this is like a neutral site. All hospitals can feed to this, and there's staff that works there.
Somewhere, somebody is saying that's a great idea, or somebody else in hospital administration is
saying, shut up, Sullivan.
Shaking their heads, yeah. It's 8:30, FM Talk 106.5. Rob Hulbert from Lanyap on the way. Good morning, y'all. It is 8:35. Dan and Sean Sullivan.
Howdy.
Dalton, stricken ill in the midst of the show, and said, I gotta leave. And so Sean came in. Hope Dalton gets feeling better real quick. He wasn't well when he got here.
A t-shirt and shorts, like a Friday practice here. I did not have time.
Sean is not game ready.
Right, but I got the call. I did not have time to completely suit up. So, yeah, I'm in t-shirt and shorts and helmet today.
There's no telling what Rob Hulbert is wearing or not wearing right now. He's on the line with us from Lanyap.com. And Rob?
Let's just say what I'm not wearing.
All right. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We are doing great. Looking over Lanyap. We've got a lot of stories here that we can talk about. It is a little curious. To me, it's story number one. Suddenly these endorsements and support that Herman Thomas is being granted in his runoff against Corey Penn in District 1. I know you've got a story about this. I haven't had a chance to read it just yet. Give us a little sketch. What do you make of all this? What are you hearing?
Well, I mean, it strikes me as odd, too. I wrote my column about it this week as well. But it is obviously, I'm assuming most of your listeners are aware of who Herman Thomas is and aware that he was tried back in 2009 for allegedly paddling prisoners and having sex with them. He did not go to jail because the jury deadlocked and the judge then threw the charges out. He was not acquitted, as people like to say, and he was not found not guilty. The judge threw the charges out. There's a big difference. The jury of his peers did not say, no, you didn't do this. He was disbarred in Florida and Alabama and has never gotten his law license back. But he's running for office. And in the wake of all that stuff, there are people who are supporting him that are kind of strange. You know, you've got some realty groups supporting him. You've got a police benevolent group that is supporting him. And ostensibly, everybody's saying, oh, it's because he's in favor of annexation.
Okay, go ahead.
Is something that I have never heard out of his mouth. I've never heard him say it. And even when he was on the WKRG debate, he didn't say, I support annexation. He said more or less the same kinds of things that some of the other council people have said. Well, we're going to look at it. I think it's, the city needs to grow. It's the same exact thing his opponent has said, Corey Penn has said, who seems like a much more reasonable choice, in my opinion. He seems like a great guy somebody who has not been on trial for doing those types of things.
Let me interrupt for a second here, because this comes up like when you and I talked last time about it. People say what you said, the charges were thrown out. And then you say he was disbarred for what? For Florida and Alabama, did they give when they say you're disbarred?
Well, they disbarred him because he was checking prisoners out of jail. I mean, that's not an accusation. That's a fact.
There we go. That's what I want to get into. I want to get into like the facts here, even though
it's a fact that he was taking people. He was moving cases off of other judges' dockets onto his own. That's a fact. It's a fact that he was checking prisoners out of jail. That's factual. It is a fact that he was spanking young men. He has admitted these things. Even when he applied for the Florida bar with the Florida bar for his readmittance to the bar, he wrote those things. He represented himself pro se in that appeal and wrote that he did check prisoners out, that he got prisoners out of jail and brought them to his office, and that he spanked young men, but he didn't spank prisoners, is what he says.
Okay, so I just want to—I mean, I want to go back through that because, you'll see the text line of people like, well, that's not, that wasn't confirmed. So you just went through the list of things that are confirmed.
Those are confirmed. Okay. I mean, that's not unconfirmed. Other things that are confirmed, that he had a secret office in the government plaza. He had a second office confirmed. The other thing that is confirmed is that there was semen from prisoners on the floor. That is confirmed.
Yep.
Those are things that are not made up. That is not something that is subject to,
it's not conjecture.
It's not subjective thing. It's not conjecture. It's not, we heard this may have happened. These are things that happen.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because I think
so that you can take all those things and then you can say, and then he says, well, I didn't have sex with prisoners and I didn't spank prisoners. Okay.
But I spanked
all these other things.
Other people.
He's other people.
I had mom and dad. I didn't have a party at the house. I had to get together.
I mean, it's I'm a circuit court judge, but yes, in my spare time, I spank young men.
Okay. I just want to clear that up.
Spanker. Okay. I like to go around and spank people but they're not prisoners, so it's okay.
Rob, for the record, let's hit this one more time. Boy, no pun intended. So, for the record, who has come out publicly and endorsed Herman Thomas?
There are two realty groups. I can't think of the names right off the top of my head. There's a police benevolent group, they're listed in the story. I can't think of the names right off the top of my head, Dan. But
any individuals that would come to mind?
I mean, you could look at the. I'm not going to go into individuals. Okay. Just but you can look at the records of who's given money to him, and that's fine. People can give money. I'm just pointing out that I'm not trying to beat people up for supporting him. I'm just trying to point out the fact that they are saying, hey, we're supporting him because he is pro-annexation, and he's never said, I definitely will support annexation. At least he's never said it publicly that I've seen, and he won't speak to us for, I guess, obvious reasons, I don't think he's given any more of a support for annexation than Corey Penn has. And Corey Penn is a very reasonable, nice person, educated guy, good dude. I mean, I don't see a reason to choose somebody who has this background. And you know, it's what I point out in my column is that, you know, this putting Herman Thomas on the city council is a political rehabilitation for him.
Right.
That will allow him to be in the limelight for 4 years. And in 4 years, mark my words, he will run for mayor. And then all those same people will be whining, oh, my God, Herman Thomas is going to run for mayor. It's going to ruin the city. Well, you know, you guys are ones putting him there. And I think that, you know, by the same token, we're hearing, you know, I'm approached by some of these same people who say, well, LeVon Manzi is going to vote for annexation this time. Okay, well, if you've got LeVon in the bag, then why do you need Herman? You know, what's the point in having somebody who we know for a fact, while he was a judge, abused his power by checking? I mean, if you don't want to believe that he had sex with prisoners, that's fine. If you don't want to believe that he spanked prisoners, that's fine. But you do have to recognize that he has admitted to checking prisoners out of jail. That's wrong. He shouldn't have done that.
So my fundamental question is this, Rob. What motivation does this, a group of supporters that I guess will kind of go unnamed in this conversation, what is their motivation to engineer the reconstruction of his political career rather than just say, phew, that was a bad episode. Goodbye to that.
All I can tell is just that they believe that he is a guy who will support annexation. And look, I'm firmly in favor of annexation, mm-hmm. but I don't think that's the way to get it. I think we need people on the city council who are going to be good for the city. Corey Penn seems like the kind of guy that the city can use, a younger leader, somebody who's, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know Corey personally very, very well. I mean, I've sat down and talked to him for a while, and he seems like a good candidate. He doesn't have that kind of baggage. I don't know why we want to put somebody with that sort of baggage in office. I don't know why people want to support that. It's going to be, you know, I think, number one, he will be a hindrance to getting things done. I think it's going to be all about him. There's just a lot of things there. I mean, he spent 12 years rehabilitating, you know, trying to tell a different story, trying to say that people went after him because he ran for a presiding judge, which is a joke. I mean, that's the judges didn't have to get together and come up with some big plan to get rid of him. All they just had to do is not vote for him for presiding judge, which they didn't do. So, you know, I don't know why they would have to have his life ruined. He chose not to fight he chose not to go before the Judicial Inquiries Commission. He resigned rather than go through that hearing because he knew he was in trouble.
Okay. Let me ask another endorsement here. Yesterday. Outgoing Councilman District 1. Fred Richardson had a big announcement yesterday.
Yeah.
It went moved from Tricentennial Park because of the flooding to Facebook, where he made an announcement that he was endorsing Thomas as well.
It's a sad coda for his career. I mean, it is. It's a sad ending for his career to endorse Herman Thomas. You know, I think that is I think it is just a really bad move on his part, and to try to liken it to the civil rights struggle, to try to liken it to, you know, all the things that he said to us after he did it, you know, it's just a joke. I mean, Herman Thomas got himself in trouble. Herman Thomas did not, you know, nobody was out to get Herman Thomas. In fact, Herman Thomas benefited. He's not in jail because I think the system worked to help him, not to get him. You know, people went out of their way to keep him from going to jail.
Scotty asked a question on the text line. I think this is pretty good. Scotty says, wasn't Fred against annexation? Why would he support a candidate who is pro-annexation?
I think Fred just wants to support somebody who's going to be a thorn in the side of in Stimson's side. I think that's primarily it. I mean, I think that Fred and honestly, that's Rich to some degree, are just both eaten up with irritation with the mayor.
Well, they don't like a big rainy day fund. That came clear yesterday, I guess.
They don't like the rainy day fund. There's a number of things they don't like, but they've been for the last 4 years in lockstep and just doing whatever they can to try to upend the mayor's agenda. But you know, Fred is just, I think he just wants somebody else to be on the board that is it's a contrarian.
Yeah, but if the whole thing is this thing, oh well, he's, you know, these groups support him because he's going to be pro-annexation, and that is the thorniest of thorns into the administration, why would he support somebody who's pro-annexation? So it seems to, like Scotty asked a great question, I think. Doesn't that undermine that whole idea for groups supporting Herman Thomas because he's pro-annexation?
Look, you know, if those groups can show me where Herman Thomas has said that he's pro-annexation, I'll be happy to see it. He's not said it to me. He's never said it publicly. He's never said it to us. He's never said it when he was on the KRG debate. He didn't say it. He said, essentially, I'm for growth. I think we should have talked about it more before the last annexation. He didn't say he was against annexation. He just didn't say he's for it.
What did Corey Penn have to say?
Strong terms. And Corey Penn has said, you know, basically he's pro-growth. And as long as there's money that's coming into the city, he's pro-growth.
And just to be clear, you've asked all the candidates to sit down with you, and Herman Thomas has declined?
He has not answered our phone call, so I can't say that he's declined.
Okay.
He doesn't answer our phone calls.
Okay. All right.
And he hasn't, and he won't. That's the other part about it. You know, District 1, you're going to have a council person who doesn't speak to the media at all.
Yeah.
So, maybe that doesn't bother anybody or not, but, he's going to be, if they vote him in, I think Corey Penn will win. I think he's a better candidate, and I hope people will have better sense than to do that. And I think a lot of the people that are supporting, that are offering the support, aren't even District 1 voters.
Rob, we're up against the break. Hang on. We'll talk more about that. Rob Holbert with Lanyap Mobile, 8:49. Sean in for Dalton. It's Dan Brennan, Sean Sullivan, and Mobile Mornings. FM Talk 106.5, 8:53. Dan, Sean in for Dalton. And then you got, by the way, Auburn fans tonight, Tiger Talk is going to be live at 6 o'clock as Auburn prepares for that whiteout game against Penn State. And then my most fun event of the week is Tiger Talk Overtime.
That's right.
It happens at Voodoo Wing Company on Old Shell Road across from the university. And the FM Talk 106.5 gang shows up. So you can say hello to all of us.
That's right.
And you got Doug Holton taking care of that show. It's a lot of fun. And if you're an Auburn fan, you don't want to miss it. But why don't you come out to Voodoo and have yourself some dinner and maybe a cold beer, and we'll see you out there.
A good time. You'll see the right across from South, see the FM Talk 106.5 van right there in front of Voodoo Wing Company. And come on in and say it. We get there in the 6 o'clock hour.
That's right. I get there around 5:30. Because I can't wait.
That's right.
8:53, Rob Holbert from Lanyap joining us on the line. Rob, what else is that, you know, caught your interest that is in your own publication this week?
Everything is so interesting. It's all fascinating. One of the things that I've got a story this week, you know, I've been working on a series of articles about University of Alabama and spending up there. There's a publication called the Chronicle of Higher Education, which if you're not in the higher ed community, you may not have heard of, but in the world of colleges and universities, it's a biblical stature. It is it's a really big publication, and they do a thing every year where they basically crunch the numbers and tell you which schools have the highest paid leadership and administration, etc., and just a variety of things about schools. Well, it turns out Alabama has the number 14 and number 15 highest paid administrators in the country for a public university. It is the highest paid for the system office, which is the administration office that funds all of the campuses. is the highest. It's the highest paid in the country in two categories, and then also has the second highest paid legal, basically the highest paid lawyer in the country, second highest paid lawyer in the country on staff as well. But it also, one of the things that really jumps out on that in their stuff is in their calculations is that it is number five in terms of the gap between what you pay, you know, what people pay, what they take in tuition and fees, and what they spend educating that child, that student. So, you know, they're spending 30% of the money that parents are paying on something other than educating the kid. And that one really jumps out a lot too. And it's, we've done some, there are some other numbers that we crunched in there that I've been looking at, and just the overall rise of salaries at the school has been pretty amazing when you look at administrators, you know, and that's the thing is, you know, people say, oh, well, they make so much money from the football team. They've got all this tons of money. Well, they're taking $500 million a year from the state. You know, it gets more and more every year. And it's almost $600 million this year. So, you know, it's not as if the school is run. It's not a private university. It's not run without your tax dollars. And you know, they're taking a very big chunk of the education trust fund that goes to the school, and they're spending it. There's a lot of money being spent on people, frankly, wastefully, you know, and unnecessarily, I think.
Who makes the decision to green light that, you know, that kind of spending on those jobs?
It's the Board of Trustees, really. Okay. And that's the thing. You know, when the Board of Trustees is, they're ultimately responsible because they have the Financial Committee and the Compensation Committee. And the Compensation Committee is the one that decides on these very high salaries. And, you know, and as I've written before, you've got people who are leaving, they retire, you know, a president or a chancellor, they retire. And instead of just saying, hey, thanks, you did a great job, I know we paid millions of dollars, they continue to pay them for sometimes a year or two just at the same salary for doing nothing. Or they put them in some kind of a weird new job that really isn't a job and pay them for years and years and years. You know, it's like the athletic director's salary has gone from $710,000 4 years ago to $1.8 million in just 4 years. There's just a lot of, you know, the new chancellor, his salary was just when he came in 19, when they made him chancellor in 19, his salary was $300,000 more than the previous chancellor.
So, and the people that make that decision on the board, they arrive on the board. Who puts them on the board?
Well, they're the governor, basically. I think a lot of the governor and legislature, I think, put them on the board. I think it is how they're put there. And it's, you know, they're on there, but they have a term limit, 18 years. They can serve 3 6-year terms. And, you know, I mean, I think some of those people, I think there are some people who are very involved in it. I think there's some people who are there primarily just, you know, it's a fun job for them. They get to go to football games and be treated like a big shot.
Rob, we're up against the end of the show here. So tell folks they want to pick up Lanyap. It's out on the streets now, right?
Yeah, you can check it out. Our purple boxes. You can also go online at lanyapmobile.com.